My name's Nate H. I'm an alcoholic from Prescott.
Nate.
I guess what we're going to do this is we're all going to kind of just give our take on 1, 2, and 3. And, you know, the way that I was put through 1, 2, and 3 is kind of somewhat different than I've seen in the past. I have a lot of beliefs on 1, 2, and 3, especially 1. I think that, you know, you hear around the program that 1's the only step that you have to do perfectly. And, I believe in that. However, I'm a wordist, and I don't really believe in the word that you have to do perfectly. I think that step one happens to you. I think that step one is something that happened to me, before I got to Alcoholics Anonymous. Long before I got to Alcoholics Anonymous, I was ready to come here. Having said that, I have seen people get a first step in Alcoholics Anonymous and come to a bottom in Alcoholics Anonymous. You know, my sponsor says is that there's people that are in this program who are still, you know, going through their story. They're still building onto their story. You know, it's just whenever you get that surrender, is when you get a first step. I believe that, you know, this program is one of principles, and I believe the principle of the first step is one of surrender. I think that the first step means for me is that when I came in here, I ceased fighting everyone and everything. I wasn't here to argue with anybody. I wasn't here to pick up chicks. I wasn't here to, you know, well, all that shit happened too, but, you know, that wasn't my goal when I got here. I wanted to live. You know, I was dying one day at a time when I got here. I didn't know anything except to drink. I didn't know anything but to run. You know, everything that I do is about running. It's not always about drinking anymore. You know, I have to take a first step every day. For me, it's I have to stop and say, okay, you know, I can run from this, which is the opposite of a surrender. You know, recovery is about going against everything that you don't want. Yeah, recovery is about doing everything that you don't want to do. It really is. You have to change that run attitude. You know, there was a time when I was 2 years sober, and I had taken a little tiny pill that I shouldn't have, and basically what that did was it made me a liar about my sobriety date by 1 day, or I mean, sorry, 1 month. And I tell this story a lot when I speak, and I'm told that I have to tell it because every time I tell it, somebody changes their sobriety date. At 2 years sober, this one little tiny pill that didn't do anything to me, you know, that was a benzo, and I took it to feel something different. Even though I didn't feel something different, I took it. At 2 years sober, it was driving me nuts. So much so that I was ready to pack up all my shit in a U-Haul and blow town. You know, I didn't want to be seen by anybody in Alcoholics Anonymous because I was a fraud. I was a liar. I was sitting there, you know, sharing my sobriety date from the podium, and it wasn't truthful. So it basically came down to another surrender for me at 2 years sober. It was, you know, am I going to get honest and, you know, change my sobriety date, or am I going to pack up all my shit in a U-Haul and blow town because I can't take this anymore inside of my head? And I'm lucky, and I don't know why I got to take another surrender, but I did, you know, and I stood up at my home group and I changed my sobriety date in front of everybody. And it was the most humbling thing that I've, one of the most humbling things that I've done in Alcoholics Anonymous to this point, you know. I don't have my sponsees write anything about a first step. You know, you hear some sponsors who will, like, write your whole life story and all this shit, and I just don't do it. I don't see a point because, like I said earlier, I think a first step happens to you. I don't think any amount of writing is going to get you to a first step. I don't think any amount of anything other than drinking is going to get you to a first step. The truth about it is, you know, coming from a member of Alcoholics Anonymous, is sometimes you have to drink to get sober. And that's 100% honest to God truth. I know that you're here to get sober, but sometimes you have to drink to get to that first step and get that surrender so that you can make the steps operational. Because I feel like without a surrender, the steps aren't operational. You cannot do the steps without a first step. You can go through them and do the motions, but you're balking at everything because the surrender is not present. I don't know why some people get a surrender when other people don't. I don't know why some people have to go so far down the scale. You know, some people have to go really, really far down the scale in order to finally get that first step. You know, but some people don't. They walk in and they go, okay, I'm done. Let's do this. You know, I got fired from this job and oh shit. You know, for me, consequences didn't work. It took me, you know, just to want to live to get my first step. You're locked in, bud. You can't go. I'm joking. Go ahead.
Fucking sharks out there.
I guess, you know, moving on to step two is when I sit down with a guy, I go through 1, 2, and 3 with him in the first meet that I meet up with him. Because I don't think that it's, I think it's vital to get him, you know, working on his fourth step as soon as possible. I don't think that any amount of talking that I can do with you, you know, will get you anywhere, any farther than you already are. Because I don't know about you guys, but when I got here, I didn't sit down with my sponsor and all of a sudden it was like click. The first day is like, oh yeah, I'm ready to make a decision to turn my will and my life over to the care of God as I understand him. I didn't even know who the fuck God was. You know, I didn't know anything about God. I didn't know, you know, all I knew was that I didn't want to die anymore, and this guy over here says he drank like me. I believe him because he won my confidence, and now I'm going to do whatever he tells me to do. You know, this program is about winning confidence, and that's the second step. You know, the second step for me when I got here was explained to me is, you know, I came to believe that this guy sitting in front of me, my sponsor, has a solution. You know, I didn't know, I came to believe that a power greater than myself could restore me to sanity. I don't know what the fuck a power greater than myself is. And I obviously don't know how to tap into one. So I came to believe that this guy, that the power that was working in this guy sitting across the table for me worked for him. I was willing to believe in this thing called God. You know, it says in the second step in the book that, you know, all you need is just the tiniest bit, shred of maybe there might be a God up there to proceed. That's it. That's all that there is, oh, maybe there's something out there that can work for me. And you can proceed. And as long as you got that first step, it makes the second step operational, and so on and so forth. My sponsor then told me, he goes, all right, third step time. Are you going to tell me, are you going to make a decision to me that you are going to proceed with steps 4 through 12? And I said, yes, if that's what it takes. So right then and there, he made me take a decision. You know, he made me make a decision. He made me go, okay, you're making a decision to me. Basically, it was a promise to him, you know, my second step, that I was going to do steps 4 through 12 with him. You know, that whole second step thing needs a little clarification because I understand today that no human power can relieve my alcoholism. You know, my wife won't keep me sober. My daughter won't keep me sober. My best friend won't keep me sober. But God will. And what my second step is I believe that there's a God working in his life. You know, it's not about him as a person. I know that he's a pretty fucked up individual who did a lot of stupid shit and a lot of bad shit. You know, but I know that he's not doing that anymore. So I know that there's something working in his life that changed him. You know, so, you know, third step was easy for me. Okay, I'll make a decision. Okay, and then throughout the day I make decisions. Alright, this morning I made a decision that I was going to get up and do this, 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 and this. You know, this morning I was going to wake up and make a decision to turn my will and my life over to the care of God. I don't know what that is. You know, but I started to do it, and it started to work for me. You know, and it's about taking those three steps every day. Every day when I wake up, I have to surrender, and I have to surrender throughout the day. Every single day, I have to take a first step throughout the day, you know, and it always boils down to shit I don't want to do. When I start, you know, not doing stuff is when, you know, I start going backwards. You know, if there's some guy who I really know I should call and I'm putting off calling him, you know, my sponsor says that fuck it's a prayer. So I go, fuck it.
Fuck yeah.
Dial the phone. Hey dude. Yeah. Some, you know, just things like that. Always doing the hard thing. So I'll pass it over to these other gentlemen. That's all I got. Thanks.
Thanks, Nate. My name's Aaron. I'm an alcoholic.
Aaron.
Any retreads in here? People that have been sober, had some sobriety, and then pissed it all away? Good. My people. my sobriety date is 8/31/13. God willing, Sunday I'll have a year sober again. My sponsor took me through the first through third step this time around in a much different way than I'd ever experienced, because the ways that we had gone through before, I don't know that the way he took me through is what made the difference. I just think that I was willing to have a spiritual experience this time. You know, it says we cease fighting everything and everyone, as Nate talked about. Well, one of the everythings that I failed to realize was in there was God. For me, I had over 2.5 years sober twice with no God in my life. None. So the first step was like, you know, I worked on it a lot out there. And when I came into the rooms of AA, I worked on it a lot in here. I don't know. You know, I hear people say from the podium, and I think it's just the worst thing I've ever heard in my life, is that my, you know, my best day loaded isn't as good as my worst day sober. And I just think that's absolute bullshit, because I had some amazing times loaded, and I had some absolute shit days sober. What I can tell you honestly is this, and this is my experience, take it or leave it. My worst days sober are a direct result of not having a spiritual solution in my life. Because drugs and alcohol were my answer. You know what I mean? Like, that's what took the edge off. That's what killed the pain. That's what provided the lubricant I needed to make it to the mall or the grocery store or to work. That's what I needed to be out there with you people doing life. And I'm ill-equipped to do that without God, you know? So I did a lot of first step work in the rooms of AA, because getting loaded was always the last thing I did. You know, after I came into the rooms of AA, the last thing I ever did before I got loaded was get loaded. All the behaviors, the thoughts and actions that were leading up to that were extremely alcoholic behavior. And so I did a lot of first step work. And this time around, my sponsor just had me, when my sponsor came to my house to get me that morning, cause I called him, and, I didn't know how the day was going to end if my feet hit the ground, because it wasn't the handle of booze in my freezer or the dope in my dresser. It was the pistol in my nightstand that was the first thought in my head. And I was scared for the first, like truly to my core, scared like I can never remember before, you know? And I called him, and you know, that was God working in my life, man. And I called him. He showed up at my house as a family man. He's got two kids, you know, wife, and he dropped everything to come to my house. Threw me in a shower, dumped my booze, flushed my dope, and said, when I got out of the shower, he's like, you want to go to a meeting? And I said, I think I need to, but I don't really want to. And he said, Aaron, if you don't find a way to get a relationship with God, you're going to die. And I believed him. I believed into the core of my being that was the next stop, you know? And so I begrudgingly, man, I mean, Matt was my roommate at the time. I didn't want to be in AA again. I didn't want to be in AA again. It just was not, it didn't work, da-da-da-da-da, whatever. The truth is that I wasn't doing everything that the big book talks about in order to develop a relationship with God. It's the 12th step says, pure and simple, having had a spiritual experience as the result, the meaning singular result of the big book is to help us have a spiritual experience. That's what it's for. You know what I mean? A good friend of mine who's actually speaking tomorrow will tell you that it's, you know, it's spirituality written in drunk. That's what the big book is, you know? It's a way, and I can tell you honestly that the reason I am where I am today is because I continue to seek a relationship with God. You know, it says in the big book, abandon yourself to God as you understand God. Well, that understanding changes daily, so I need to abandon myself to God daily. You know what I mean? I need to seek to understand what my purpose is in God's world, not the other way around. You know, I shouldn't try to figure out, like, where does God fit into my life? I should be trying to figure out where I fit in God's. And the more I take that thought and action into my daily living, the easier my life gets. You know, there's a lot less responsibility when I'm not controlling everything, like traffic or the line at the grocery store or, you know, my boss. You know, like thinking that I have some form of power over these people makes me a miserable human being. You know, so my sponsor took me through the first step and he said, I want you to write your life story as early as you can remember on a position of unmanageability and powerlessness. And that had to do with everything before I started getting loaded. You know, that dealt with physical abuse, sexual abuse, just all kinds of just terrible shit at school. Everything growing up has nothing to do with why I'm an alcoholic today. But powerlessness and unmanageability have been pervasive in my life for as long as I can remember. And, you know, I wrote that out and we did some work on it. And that, I believe that there's work behind every single step. Every single step. If you don't, I invite you to look at a 12 and 12 and ask yourself the big book and the 12 and 12. You can turn almost any sentence in there into a question and see how it applies to your life. There's a lot of shit to be gained in the first, second, and third step. And so we did that, and then in the second step, it's like, you know, came to believe in a power greater than ourselves. Well, I mean, I've believed in a power greater than myself since the first time I ever took a shot at tequila. You know what I mean? Like, I believed in the power of tequila. I believed in the power of other substances outside of alcohol. You know, and a good friend of Matt and I's will tell you, like, I was never seeking to understand why a bottle of Jack or a bag of Coke would do what it does for me. I just wanted the experience of that, you know? And so that's what I strove for, is like, what am I trying to experience as a result of understand of a relationship with God? And really it's, I just want to, what?
Peace.
Peace. That's all I want, right? I want the voice in my head to stop, you know? Another thing I hear from the podium that I absolutely hate is my disease is in the parking lot doing push-ups. It's getting stronger while I'm in here. And that's in my opinion, that's a fucking lie. Because if you're anything like me, my disease sits between my ears. And it sounds just like me, so it's a voice I trust. And it says, it's cool, man. Just have a drink. It'll be different this time, I promise. And I believe that. And it's a quiet, calm voice. You know what I mean? It's never demanding. But the further I get away from God, the more that voice just blots out everything else. It'll whisper. It'll blot out every other sound in my head. You know, until I have no other choice but to get loaded. And I believe that that's what makes me an alcoholic. I don't think normal people have that voice. I don't believe my disease is trying to kill me. My disease is extremely egocentric. You know, it wants to survive and it wants me to serve it completely. It wants every breath I take, everything I do to be in service of it as opposed to be in service of God. You know, because then I'm isolated from you and it can have me to itself and I'm just sitting there getting loaded to just feed the beast. So, you know, I just wanted peace and, you know, abandoning myself as I understand God, or, I mean, I didn't even know if I believed in God this time around. You know what I mean? I just didn't. I had no concept of what power God could have in my life. I saw the power that it had in other people's lives. I've seen a lot. I've been in the room since 2006. I've seen a lot of people get and stay sober. And I was angry at them because I couldn't have that. It wasn't that I couldn't. I was unwilling. I was unwilling to surrender, right? So I thought about God, and I did a lot of work, and the biggest thing that I came up with was that I don't know. I don't know, because I'd never given it a fair shake. You know what I mean? I'd never given God an opportunity to have that power in my life. And so every day I wake up and I just say, it's your shit, God. Like, you know, I'm here. Show me what to do next. And it makes life real simple, you know. And then in the third step, you know, turn our life and our will over to God. If you're anything like me, man, sometimes that's every 30-second battle. You know what I mean? Sometimes I have a real hard time, especially when it comes to things like romance, romantic relationships, finances, my relationship with my son. Like, I just want to grab that and hold on to it, you know what I mean? And it's not anything that I can control, but I think that I have some power over it because I'm a sick alcoholic, you know? So I turn my will and my life over. And, you know, turning my will and my life over, it sounds easy, you know? Hit your knees, say, God, it's your shit, not mine, and just go through your day. I inherently want to take it back. Like, there's something spring-loaded in me, and the habit has been formed that I will pull it back at a moment's notice. And then I'll realize, and I'll go, okay, God, you can have it, you know? But do I really want God to have it, you know? And the thing is that I do, but that's a practice, right? Meditation and prayer are practices. You know, guys don't make the NFL. Guys don't make it to the NHL. They don't make the NBA just because they're naturally gifted. You know what I mean? Kobe Bryant practices all the time. Peyton Manning practices all the time. These guys are out there doing what they do because they want to be the best. That practice is there because they get better every time. My prayer life and my meditation, my relationship with God, requires daily maintenance. It tells us later in the 10th step, what we are granted is a daily reprieve based on our spiritual condition. It doesn't say anything else. I'm granted a reprieve as a stay of execution. My alcoholism is a terminal illness. It will eventually kill me if I don't have a relationship with God. So therefore, I'm granted this reprieve based on one condition, the relationship that I have with God today. And that doesn't mean that I always feel that God's present in my life, you know. Some days I pray and I feel like I'm praying to one of these chairs, you know. But the days that, you know, and I talk and I seek spiritual counsel. I go to the big book. I go to, in my faith, I go to the Bible and things like that. And I talk to guys that I see walking a spiritual path. You know what I mean? In the rooms of recovery, I go to these guys that I see just, that seem to be on fire, you know, and seem to have a great relationship with God. And I say, and I ask them questions like, do you feel it every day? And they're like, fuck no. No, I don't feel it every day. But the point is that I do it every day so that the days that I do feel it, man, that's what gives me the juice, right? That's what gives me the high. I have an amazing relationship with God today. I can honestly say that I have an amazing relationship with God today. And if you're having trouble understanding your love for God, think about the way that your parents love you. If you don't have your own child, think about the way that your parents love you. All the shit we've dragged them through as a result of getting sober and being there for us. Like, that's how God loves us, but it's infallible. People, unfortunately, we have the power to fail. And we do a lot, you know. It's just, it's kind of the nature, it's human nature. That same level of love, but always perfect, is what, to me, God is. And I can grasp that concept enough, and that's all I need to know about God. Everything else that happens is none of my business. It's way above my pay grade. I have a beautiful life today that was absolutely destroyed a year ago. Destroyed. As a result of this disease. And the only thing that I can attribute to is God and my relationship with God. That's all I got. Thanks.
Thanks, Aaron. Matt, alcoholic.
Hey, Matt.
Sobriety date's December 16th, 06. My home group's the Wolfpack Alcoholics Anonymous in Tempe or East Valley. It's where I met Aaron 7.5 years ago. It's been a fucking ride. I was going to bed on, I hear Howard say this a lot, I was going to bed on page 8 of Alcoholics, the Big Book, December 15th, 06. No words could tell the bitter morass and self-pity, quicksand stretched around me in all directions. I've met my match. I've been overwhelmed. Alcohol is my master. Those are Bill's words, sort of. And that was it. Just like he had shared, I didn't work a first step. A first step fucking worked me without lube. And the first step is what happened to me by me living the way I wanted to live. And, you know, this is the AA conference. I liked AA really fast. I liked alcohol really fast. And life was fucking grim. And so I'm going to share two different experiences of the steps. I'm going to share an experience when I first got in, and I'm going to share an experience going through them again, you know, a year or so ago. And they're starkly different. So the first time, I was really, really convinced beyond a shadow of a doubt that I was absolutely fucked. That Friday night, I knew in my heart of hearts that when I saw my PO that next Tuesday, I was going to prison. I knew I didn't have it in me to run anymore. I had a stolen car parked down the street from my parents' house where I was staying, like every hero. And I had the dude that would front me what I needed to get rolling again. And I had all the means to continue living the way I could live, and I didn't have it in me to run anymore. I was done. I was absolutely convinced I had no clue how to crawl out of the abyss that I was in. I was equally convinced that no human on this planet could do it for me. I knew, as sure as I know that anything, that I was absolutely fucked, did not know how to quit getting loaded, and was going to die eventually as a result of it. And I was pretty slick, I thought, so it was going to take a while. The first step for me, and I think it's really with the hindsight of a few years behind me, but the first step and the second and third really all roll together just very naturally. Because if first step works you like it worked me, the most natural reaction in the world is to fucking fall to your knees and go, fucking help, even if you don't believe in anything. And to me, the idea of turning to a God that I didn't believe in for help seemed about as relevant as joining the Mickey Mouse Club. I mean, like, if there is a God, which I'm pretty sure there's not, he's certainly not going to play any effective role in my life in making any of this go away. Like, I got some serious problems going on in my life, and you got a meeting or a big book. I was just very unimpressed. But what I knew was I had no answers. And I also knew I didn't have it in me to run anymore. And I said that, you know, foxhole prayer. I whispered to the side of my bed about as loud as I could whisper, because I didn't want to get caught praying, because that'd be embarrassing. And the next day, I reached out for help. And I remember feeling very disappointed that next day that you know, nothing had happened. You know, I got my confirmation there was no God, because I'd said that prayer the night before and meant it, and nothing had happened. Now, with a little bit of hindsight, I can see that what happened was I didn't get loaded that next day, and I didn't walk a block where I had that car parked, and I didn't run again. I made it to a meeting, and I reached out for help. And that night after the meeting, went out with some people, and I watched some people that, you know, what we do in Alcoholics Anonymous is we identify, and then we share our experience. We don't fucking teach. We don't instruct. We share our experience. So, you know, this first group of guys got sober, and it started to stick. And they put their thoughts down on what they did on some paper. And out of that, we got the Big Book Alcoholics Anonymous. And, you know, that's my instruction manual. That's their thoughts put on paper on here's what we did. We don't know if there's other solutions out there. but this is the only solution that we know of, and here's the directions. And I spent some time that evening with some people that had read the instructions and done the work, guided by some other people that came ahead of them. And what I got to see by listening to them share their stories and talk and joke was that these people had lived the same life I had lived and weren't living it anymore. And, you know, those principles you see attached to steps hanging on the walls of meeting halls, that's not a approved literature. That's not, but hope does get intermingled with the second step a lot. And without knowing it, what I got in planning with that night was a little bit of hope. And the next day I got a sponsor and we started working the steps. And first step was a no-brainer. Yes, I'm powerless over alcohol and dash, my life's unmanageable. And just like Aaron said, I was broken enough that I had no delusion that the unmanageability did not stem solely from my use. The unmanageability was a part of me. I was unmanageable. I was the least qualified party to run my life there, out there. And I had no question about it. And the first step was a no-brainer. We didn't talk about the first step. We didn't work the first step. You know, I begged and pleaded with that sponsor that night to give me some shit to do, because I was crawling out of my skin, just fucking telling me what to do. And I did it. We got together. He had me write out a list of some qualities that, you know, I would want in a best friend. And, you know, a good road dog, someone to have my back. You know, I spent a lot of years running and gunning. And, you know, what I thought a friend needed to be was probably a little skewed. And we sat and talked about it a little further. And came to a good list of attributes. He goes, good, now that's your God. Let's do the third step. And where he got that from, I see now, was, you know, top of page 47. It says, when therefore we speak to you of God, we mean your own conception of God. This applies too to other spiritual expressions, which you find in this book. And he saw, you know, it says in the 12 and 12, some of us were violently anti-religious. And he saw very clearly that I was one of those fellers. And he gave me permission to change some things. So when we got the third step prayer, we took the these and thous and all that old English stuff out of it and just got off myself to you. It made it real simple for me. You know, he sort of dumbed it down. But what that man did for me was walk me through Steps Alcoholics Anonymous. And initially, in those first few months, 1, 2, and 3 was, I am completely fucked. Their God didn't, well, better be a God, because without one, I better just, you know, I need to pull a trigger. Getting loaded is not going to help. I just need to shoot myself at this point. And step 3 was, yeah, okay, I'll go ahead and work the rest of the steps, because, I mean, what the fuck does turning your will and your life over the care of God really mean anyway? You know what I mean? And that's really where I was at. And I was very belligerent and very angry, but I very much had no other option. So I worked the steps initially really just from a place of like, sure, whatever, I'll join your Mickey Mouse Club. Because I had no other options. And just like Aaron said, on the backside of the 12 steps, I woke up having a spiritual experience. I woke up having developed a relationship with a power greater than myself that, for lack of a better word, I called God. You know, in the back of the book under spiritual experience, it talks about, it's just a rearrangement of thoughts, the way I see life, the way I view things. And I begin noticing God working in my life and working in the lives around me, the lives of people around me. I begin to see God at work in this world. And it's hard to really quantify this to people that didn't know me 7.5 years ago, but that's a pretty miraculous thing. I thought the idea of God was silly, and I started seeing God work. After having worked the steps, I had a spiritual experience. And so initially for me was, I am totally screwed. There better be a God. And, you know, just a little bit down from that, you know, it says, we needed to ask ourselves but one short question. Do I now believe, or am I willing to believe, there's a power greater than myself? And I was willing to believe. I didn't now believe. I was willing. And that's all it takes. All through We Agnostics, it talks about being open-minded, setting aside prejudice, you know, just being willing. And I think if you go through and add it up, it's 12 or 15 times it says it in that chapter, in just different verbiage. And, you know, I'm probably wrong. You should read it and check, you know, fact check me. It says it a lot. And initially I was just willing. Now, I worked the steps a lot in the first few years and was really, really on fire. I went from being a hope-to-die addict on my way to prison to having a little job and a house and some friends, and I had that peace. My head wasn't chewing me alive. I didn't hate the guy in the mirror. And I got to be straight with you. It didn't happen overnight. It took a minute. It was a slow progress, but what I realized is when I first, from the time I first said that first prayer, the obsession left. That, and I don't mean I didn't have some serious, serious thoughts, but coming from a place of complete surrender, and then, and I didn't say a third step prayer, I said, there's a fucking God, you better help me. That was my first prayer. The obsession left, and I had a lot of serious thoughts and a lot of, you know what, I'm out of here. But I didn't leave. The obsession never got to the point where I had to feed the beast. And I found myself in a place at about 6 years sober where the wheels were falling off again. And I went through the steps again with another gentleman, and I had a wildly different experience. And I'll share that and kind of what I did. You know, I previously had never had a sponsee, just like you said, do step work on the first step or the second step or third step, because I didn't even know what that looked like. And in AA, we don't share opinions, we share experience. And so I didn't have any experience with writing anything for any of that stuff. My experience was I just did the work. And the work was, you know, 4 and 5 and 6 and 7 and 8 and 9 and 12. And I did my 10th and 11th step in the night and the morning, but I didn't do any handwork, you know, written work for 1 and 2. Well, this next time, my sponsor had me do something that was pretty twisted. I was in a really dark spot. I was coming out of probably the worst relationship of my life. I was real convinced that I didn't know how to have relationships. I didn't know how to have relationships that worked with people and how to be happy in this life. And on the outside, life looked really, really good. I was in the process of buying a house and, you know, I was driving a new car and I had a good job. On the inside, I was crumbling. And he had me open up the big book and went to bottom page 52. And there's a chapter in there people refer to as the bedevilments. And it goes through a series of things that, you know, if you come in here really broken, you relate to. We were having problems with our personal relationships. We were this whole list of stuff. And he had me turn each and every one of those into a paragraph or a page, just whatever. But address each and every one of those with, I'm having trouble with my personal relationships. Okay, explain. And I probably wrote a page for each. And then we sat down and went over it. And what I got was a whole new layer of the first step. I got to understand that I'm powerless over people, places, and things. And as a result, my life is unmanageable. Because self-reliance failed me. And then we took those same bedevilments and he had me write a fairy tale. If there was a power greater than yourself that could effect a change in your life as a result of these things, what would that look like? So what he wanted me to write was, like, instead of I'm having trouble with my personal relationships, what would my relationships look like if they were great? What would the transverse of that look like? And I wrote out what seemed a lot like a fairy tale to me. I wrote out what it looked like to have a healthy relationship with a female, with friends, with sponsees, with bosses, coworkers, employees, parents, siblings, you know, and not just like I'm having a great relationship with these people, but like really what does that look like in a life? What does it look like to be someone that people can go talk to? What does it look like to, you know, be someone that's willing to go talk to people, to be open, to be vulnerable? And really went through and wrote all that out. And I tell you, that was a tough one for me, because when I went and shared that with them, I lost it. I sat and bawled like a little baby, because reading through the transverse of those bedevilments, I felt like I was reading a fairy tale fiction that I was never going to see and never going to live in my life. And it was more proof that what I really need to do is go home and just be done with it. And, you know, leave a nice mess for a friend to find. And then we went to the third step. And we really looked at what it looks like to have a relationship with a power greater than ourselves. And because he and I had been working really closely over the preceding few weeks, you know, we had developed quite a relationship. We were meeting several times a week. We were talking on the phone every day. And I was back in the steps. And I mean, I was in it to win it. I was acting like a newcomer should. I was at a meeting every day. I was calling my sponsor every day. I was being accountable. I was fact-checking every thought that ran through my pea-brain little head against anybody who I respected. And that's what it takes to survive in this thing when you get here. And I was doing that because I was desperate and afraid and broken. And he used the example of, like, you know, we've developed this relationship, and we've developed this relationship because we've invested time in it. And you need to now invest time in this relationship with this power greater than yourself. You need to get a bigger God. And we started looking at what it was, what attributes, what abilities, and what power I was assigning to God. And I had to come to a place that I'm not big enough to assign attributes, powers, and abilities to God, that I need to open that up to be infinite. Because if it's not, I'm really in trouble, because my problem is infinite. I better have a God that's infinite. And then really, what does that look like to turn it over? And that became really, turning it over really became, I ask, and then I get quiet and listen. And I had to really start living my life moment to moment, like it talks about, you know, 86 and 87. Like, you know, when in doubt, I pause. I pray. I call somebody. I ask for help. And I ask for the direction in the morning, and then I get fucking quiet and listen for the answer. When I walk into a situation and I start getting anxious or whatever, instead of pushing through it and trying to create an outcome, I need to get quiet and figure out what my job is here. And if I don't fucking know, I pick up the phone and ask. And it didn't take long, you know? It doesn't take long to figure out that most of what runs through my head is bullshit. And it doesn't take long to figure out what just doing the right thing is. And I started living that way. And I had a totally different experience with the steps. You know, we didn't spend a lot of time on step three. We talked about it, wrote about it a little bit. He talked me through uncorking God, because I had God in a small little bottle. And God could remove my obsession, and God could sober up the guys I sponsored, providing I did a good job, because I thought that was on me to do. And God could do a lot of things in other people's lives, but God couldn't manage my job or my relationships or put the right people in my life. It was real important to me that I made this relationship with this person work, and I didn't have the fucking power to. And when I let go and quit trying to manage everything like Aaron talked about, I got free. It's amazing how much effort I put into trying to manage life. And when I quit trying to manage everything and just let go and worried about my actions and my attitudes, life got better. I'm living a life today that really sort of is that fairy tale. It's not peaches and cream every single day. But by and large, it's remarkable. I have the best relationship with an incredible lady I've ever had in my life. My work life is amazing. My relationship with my coworkers and my bosses is unbelievable. I didn't know people got along in a workplace the way I do today. My relationship with my parents has never been better. You know, life is really good. The first three are really the foundation. If you don't actually know to your heart of hearts that you are burnt, you're probably not going to turn to a God and or look to a God for a solution. And you're certainly not going to try and turn it over and let this God affect some sort of change in your life. You know, and those are really the crux of the first three steps. And you're certainly not going to launch into a course of vigorous action if you haven't done those first three. The steps really, when you come in broken, lay themselves out very, very naturally. It's a very natural flow. And, you know, this is a 12-step fellowship. You know, like, working the steps as outlined in the Big Book Alcoholics Anonymous is the solution. I went to a lot of meetings my first 5 or 6 years. And meetings are rad, and fellowship is rad, and conventions are rad, but that's not recovery. Recovery is outlined in that book, and you need a guide. Because Bill Wilson was a crazy fool who wrote a book with a whole bunch of crazy words in the fit of depression in 1939. We don't talk that way anymore. So you need a guide to walk you through that thing and understand what the hell he's trying to say. And take you through those steps. And, you know, it's a 12-step fellowship. If you're feeling broken, you might try them. And that's just, you know, I don't have another solution. I don't have any other experience. My experience is that these steps changed my life. And they changed my life in a way that I never would have dreamt possible. Never would have occurred to me. And I'm really grateful for you guys. And I'll pass.